Pathway to Promise podcast with Dr. Brad Miller, episode number 58, Finish with Forgiveness, with filmmaker Ted Green.
You know, she had the power, the strength, and the courage, I would say, to forgive what many would call the unforgivable, and then to stand up to just an unbelievable criticism from some of her friends.
Hi, this is Dan Miller from 48days.com, where I help folks like you find the true path to a meaningful, purposeful, and profitable life in 48 days. Dr. Brad Miller is here to guide you on your path to your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose on the Pathway to Promise podcast.
You're on the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. Brad believes every person has a God-given promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose, and that you must have a plan and a guide to get there. The Pathway to Promise podcast not only is your guide through the wilderness of depression and disappointment that stand between you and your promised life, but also brings you insights and direction from inspiring, successful thought leaders who have transformed their lives. Welcome to the Pathway to Promise. Now, here's Brad.
Hello, good people. Welcome to Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. It is an honor, a privilege, a joy to have you with me today here on the podcast, where we are all about providing encouragement and a word of hope and a word of favor into your life to help you overcome any adversity that you have to achieve your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. We do that by teaching and leading and giving inspiring stories of hope and encouragement, and by being taught by and encouraged by great teachers and by leaders and storytellers, such as the case today when we have a storyteller with us, filmmaker Ted Green, who is all about creating documentary films, which are all about the triumph of the human spirit. We'll get into that in just a minute. Just want to let you know, if you want to know more about the Pathway to Promise, you can always go to our website, pathwaypromise.com, where we have back episodes of the Pathway to Promise podcast that you will find helpful to your life, for you to act boldly and to draw on a higher power, to love deeply, and to act with self-discipline. We can be helpful to your life. We'd appreciate it if you can subscribe on iTunes and on the other places, Stitcher and other places where you can connect to our podcast. We did also want you to know that on our website, pathwaypromise.com, we have a free gift for you, which is the 4-minute life planning guide that will be helpful to help you frame your day in the morning and the evening for success. But today, Ted Green of TedGreenFilms.com. Ted Green is a former newspaper columnist and sports journalist. He worked for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Miami Herald, Indianapolis Star for 20 years until he found his way into filmmaking and doing what he loves to do best, telling great stories, which are all about the triumph of the human spirit. He calls himself a research nut and a storyteller. He wants to learn everything he can about a subject of historical and social importance and bring about things that brings those stories to life for posterity. He has created movies about sports figures, such as legendary basketball coach John Wooden and Christmas Addicts basketball team, high school basketball team in Indianapolis, which was the first all-black school to rise to the top with Oscar Robertson to win the state championship, and about the trials and tribulations that team had dealing with racism and other things. But today we're going to talk to him primarily about his latest movie, which is called Ava A7063, which is the story of an incredible woman, Ava Kaur, K-O-R, who at the age of 10 was separated from her family at Auschwitz concentration camp among the Nazis. And at age 10, she and her twin were separated from their mother and other relatives, who were immediately taken away to be killed. And she underwent incredibly just horrible and gross experimentation at the hands of Dr. Joseph Mengele. And Ted tells a story about her life, not only about overcoming and surviving Auschwitz, but about how she then became an incredible advocate for the twins who were experimented upon and overcome anti-Semitism and all kinds of other things in order to lead the charge and also to prosecute and to Dr. Mengele. This is a story of which has great depth and meaningfulness about it. And it is a story also about how Ted made some pivots in his life in order to get this story told. I think you're going to really get a lot out of this story about the making of the movie Eva, about Eva, and about her life and how it can truly be inspirational to you in your life. Because whatever issues and problems you have in your life, they probably pale in comparison to being in Auschwitz concentration camp and being experimented upon. Take this into perspective, friends. Learn, listen, engage with this interview we have today with Ted Green from Ted Green Films. Let's get into our conversation right now. My privilege today to have with us Ted Green of Ted Green Films, who is a filmmaker of some really, really awesome films that have showed the human spirit in some really neat ways, shows how people have overcome great adversity. And we'll go in one particular case about a woman who was in a Nazi concentration camp, and we'll talk about her in just a minute. But Ted, welcome to Pathway to Promise.
Thanks, Brad. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, you're a great storyteller, and I enjoy your work, but you started off your storytelling in the newspaper business and somehow navigated to film. Tell us a little bit about your story, about how you got to where you're at today.
Sure. And actually, I'll start by saying that I still consider myself a journalist rather than a filmmaker. I'm just operating in a different medium now. But after college, and then I went to grad school in Chicago for journalism, and then I was going to be nothing but a sports writer, nothing else. That's all I was going to be. And then I was sitting at home for maybe 6 months, striking out at every job opportunity. And one popped up in a tiny little town in Florida where I was going to be a news copy editor. And I was going to have no part of that. But my parents said, "You're out the door. You're taking it." And I said, "Okay." Packed up my three fish into the U-Haul, and then down we went. So, anyway, I ultimately did end up in the sports side of things, and I was an editor in sports departments in various capacities for just about 20 years. I was with the Miami Herald for 5 years. I was with the Cincinnati Enquirer for 3 years. And then in 2001, shortly after my wife and I had our twins, we were working at the Miami Herald at the time, she got a job offer here in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And we're both kind of Midwesterners. And, you know, we love South Florida, but we didn't think that was maybe the best place to raise our kids, in our opinion. And so...
And your kids were about how old at this time?
They were 3 months old.
When we first got
the offer. And so, well, I should say, she got an offer. I didn't get an offer. So, right. And what that all amounted to is we moved to Indianapolis, where we'd never been before. She started at the Indianapolis Star, and I ended up being a stay-at-home dad for 3 years, which time I wrote a novel. It's been sitting in my underwear drawer ever since.
So it's not published?
No, not published.
Oh,
no,
my goodness.
I decided that I wanted to be William Faulkner, and I decided I needed a little more work before I could really
okay.
be William Faulkner.
All right.
Anyway, I'll jump ahead here. But so then I did ultimately... After the kids were old enough to go to preschool, I looked for a job, and I got one at the Star. So I started at the Star in 2004. And about 2009, I sort of moved over a little bit to the digital side of things. It was kind of new at that time, at least in newspapers. And something happened, and that was that John Wooden celebrated his 99th birthday. Of course, John Wooden, Indiana legend, national legend. And I thought, you know...
And he was still living at the time.
He was still living. And I just thought, you know, I like to sort of plan ahead, and I believe in time pegs. And I thought, you know, we should plan for something truly special if he, you know, makes it to 100. Or, for that matter, if in the unfortunate case that he didn't. And I thought, well, what can we do? And I went through my old bag of tricks and didn't find it. It was an old bag of tricks. And I thought, well, how about like a 5-minute video? You know, how hard could it be? You know, I'd find a few old photos and string together some maudlin music and some bad narration and zip. It would be a piece of cake, right? Well, I got so in what I wanted to focus on, because everything's been written about him, about his time at UCLA. But as I researched it a little bit, there wasn't that much on his years in Indiana. And he spent many, many years in Indiana. This is where he grew up, and he first started coaching and teaching, and this is where he sort of developed his values that made him famous. And so I thought, wow, this is what I'll focus on. And I started talking to people, and they started talking to me and opening up stories. And I was just kind of amazed by this, about all that I was learning. And I was also amazed because I'd never done, you know, I was an editor, not a reporter, so I'd done some interviews, not a ton, but I've never done it before on with video, where you can see the emotions and you know, almost like the look in their eyes is almost as important as what's coming out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of, also a long way of saying that, and you'll explain this itself, that the original 5-minute project all of a sudden ended up a 30-minute project.
Okay.
And the newspaper folks were like, what are you doing? What have you been doing on our time?
Yeah.
You know, this is something back then, certainly, and still even now, you don't see newspapers doing sort of 30-minute mini documentaries. Well, so I was sort of a pariah there for a bit, and then somebody suggested, well, why don't you walk it up the street to WFYI, the public station here in Indianapolis?
Okay.
I'd never been here. It was a complete cold call. I did send it in advance to the director of programming, Clayton Taylor, who's since become a dear friend. And so he invited me in to talk about it, and he just said, he kind of had a twinkle in his eye. He said, you know, I think I know somebody who might get a kick out of this. Why don't you come with me? Walk me down the hall. Didn't know where I was going. Next thing I know, I'm in CEO and President Lloyd Wright's office.
Oh, my goodness.
And
wow.
On his desk is a picture of himself, arm in arm, with John Wooden. And
I thought, so you hit the right people at the right time, didn't you?
Serendipity, baby.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Anyway, so what that resulted in was a 30-minute video that was, and we sold a sponsorship that all of a sudden now is very popular at the paper. A 30-minute video, I'd call it a documentary on John Wooden, and I look back now and I almost cringe a little bit at the technical quality of it. WFY was able to pretty it up quite a bit, but mm-hmm. still, there's only so much they could redo that I had already done.
Sure.
But nonetheless, that it spread. It got picked up by American Public Television, which is sort of the over umbrella body over PBS member stations, and it played I think it was 180 markets around the country. And it wasn't because of anything great I had done. It was because of the topic.
Sure.
One of the first rules of I've learned as being a filmmaker is pick a good topic.
There
it'll
you
take
go.
You a long way. But I sort of caught the bug with that. What this great new way of storytelling. And I've got to watch people react to it and get emotional. And also just about John Wooden's story. It's just not a basketball story. I didn't do a basketball story.
Right.
Really, I wanted to show this incredible guy. This incredible, above all, a teacher, he would say, more than a basketball
Yes, that was his theme, wasn't it?
He was a teacher, and he got those values from his parents, and they're still there, buried down there outside Martinsville.
Right.
And I just, there's something hit me. There's a beauty to this that I had not experienced in all my time reporting on sports. Anyways, shortly after that, working alongside my great colleague, Dawn Mitchell, the librarian at the Star, she wanted to do a piece on military veterans. And we thought, well, all right, we're one for one. Let's try something else.
Okay.
And then we did a piece on military veterans called Hoosier Veterans, Faces of War. And that we released that, again, timing, on Veterans Day.
Okay.
And you know, it was also popular. It was more local because it was all Indiana, so it wasn't
right,
going to pick
right.
up nationally. But at that point, the strength of those two, journalism was in a, and it still is, newspapering is a tough time right now. As it turns out, my wife is now the sports editor at the Star,
okay.
somewhat ironically. But we sort of had a talk, and we thought, you know, if ever I'm going to embark on something else, this might be the time. And so then I left the paper, and ever since then, WFY has been a wonderful partner of mine. They've been letting me hang my shingle here. And since then, I've done 5 more documentaries, and just, you know, the most recent one, the one you referred to earlier, on Holocaust survivor Eva Kaur.
Eva Kaur, what an amazing story. We'll get into a little more details on that, but I'm interested, you have described yourself as a storyteller, both in the sports world and on print medium, but how the fascination came to you be doing documentaries and seeing people up, so, and the topics there. What do you look for, Ted, in a great story? What are some of the elements of a great story that you want to tell on film?
You know, I think I'm probably no different than most storytellers in this way. You need tension. You need overcoming adversity. You need a beautiful story arc. You need that can't be perfect. It can't be Hollywood, but it needs to speak to people. I can't say that I started out saying this is what I'm going to do, but it has morphed into that. And I gave a speech the other day for the Daughters of the American Revolution, their statewide conference, and noted that what I try to do now are stories showing the triumph of the human spirit. That is something that is what I focus on. And I look back, and even some of the early ones, I would say, show that, even if it wasn't necessarily my intention.
Uh-huh.
And some of these have been rooted in sports. For instance, I did one on Roger Brown, the very first Indiana Pacer. Well, I am a storyteller. I'm also a story learner. What fascinated me there, I was in a little project about the very beginnings of the Pacers. And I looked up in the, I was over at the arena, and I looked up and I looked at the retired jerseys. And I would have been sworn that just because of all my background in sports, that I would know, at least know who they were, basically every retired jersey in all of the 4 major sports. Mm-hmm. And yet here I'm in Indiana, and I don't even know who this guy Roger Brown is.
Yeah, it seemed to be a very localized thing, really, but he was a tremendous impact locally.
But, you know, the reason he wasn't bigger, I mean, people like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and others told me that he would have gone down as one of the greatest players ever, but he was caught up as a teenager, a very poor teenager in Brooklyn, in a gambling scandal that he actually had no part of, and that was more or less proven later. But because of that, and because of the NBA 9 or 10 years earlier had gone through a horrible gambling scandal, they were going overboard the other way. He was banned by the league and kicked out of college. He lost his best years. And then he only got back into the game, really, because the Indiana Pacers of this new American Basketball Association, they heard about him on the advice of Oscar Robertson, you know, who grew up here in Indianapolis. Anyway, so he, you know, here he all of a sudden, he's lost a lot of his best years, but here he is with the Pacers. He comes back. He leads them to 3 championships. He actually becomes a city county councilman for a bit. You know, there was a lot to that story, so much more than sports. And also, that resonated around the country, and that was picked up, humbled to say, that was picked up by ESPN Classic for 3 years.
Awesome.
So that was Human Spirit. Did one on Slick Leonard after that. Roger Brown's coach grew up in a very difficult situation in Terre Haute, you know, with a relationship with his dad that was not great. And, you know, he has now become sort of a father figure for the whole state, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beloved guy. And then, I'm sorry to keep listing these, but...
Well, this is what I'm after. Part of what I'm after here, Ted, is you're talking about some fascinating figures.
Yeah.
Whether all our listeners know it or not, they all have fascinating figures in their life or people they're aware of, and who have overcome some major adversity,
yeah,
to try with the human spirit, as you say. But what do you look for in these stories? What are some sparks you look for in these various stories that you want to tell about the individuals now, or the circumstances?
And I can sort of determine, at least in my model, I determine a story early on. If it looks good on paper, yeah, this has a lot to it. And then I interview people, even just off the record, just sit down with them. And I can see in their, hearing what they say and see in their eyes the effect that person, whether it's Eva Kaur or Roger Brown or somebody involved with, you know, segregated Crispus Attucks High School or John Wooden. And you see the tracks that they've left, the influence that they've had over people. Then you can start to say, wow, this is more than I bargained for. This is really something. Eva Kaur.
Yeah, because she's the most fascinating figure. Well, she's a tremendous fascinating figure. And if you can just unpack her story a little bit for our audience, and then we'll get into that.
Okay. Well, Now, her story is she was a Mengele twin at Auschwitz. That is, she was one of the twins who were experimented on by a notorious Nazi doctor, Joseph Mengele, as he was trying to create the perfect race. And so what that amounted to was when she and her family, they were the only Jews in one very small town of Romania. They were carted off to Auschwitz, dumped off onto the selection platform with so many others. And then right there in the space of a few, like 30 seconds, she was separated. She and her twin sister were separated from the rest of the family, who they never would see again. And, you know, and definitely, they definitely died in the camp. And then, so then little 10-year-old Eva and her twin, for the next 9 months, were experimented on. They ended up surviving at liberation. There were 3,000 twins that were experimented on total, and about 200 survived. But since then, it's been the surviving, as it gets put sometimes. She has lived a very, very, very difficult life. She ended up moving by sort of a weird happenstance to Terre Haute, Indiana in 1960, and went through a lot, and I'll get to more on that, but what she's become famous for, and this she did on the 50th anniversary of liberation in 1995, she announced, traveled back to Auschwitz to announce that she had forgiven the Nazis, and that made her a very, very controversial figure at the time, especially in the Jewish community, especially in the survivor, the Holocaust community. And she became really a pariah in some ways among her own people. Mm-hmm. And yet now here she is, whatever it is, almost 25 years later, and she is now a global ambassador for forgiveness, for healing, for teaching. She stands as in my opinion, the greatest example that I've ever encountered of the power a single person has through love and will and determination to change the world.
Yeah, the transformation is just amazing. Yeah. Because she chose, in her own way, even as a 10-year-old, and even as a 50-year-old lady later on, to take some bold action and do whatever it took to survive and to make an impact, based on her her will and her impetus that she had to make changes in herself and others. And I'd like to say a little bit more about that, about what are some bold actions that she took, or maybe you took, or maybe some of your other characters in your films have taken. What are some, you know, bold actions that they took to kind of break a pattern in order to affect change?
Well, you look at what Eva did, and it's almost hard to imagine. This is a woman lived very modestly in Terre Haute, and yet she, I could say effectively, but I wouldn't even say effectively, she did. She managed to introduce the Mengele twins, which was heretofore a hidden chapter of the Holocaust. She essentially introduced them to the world. And at the same time, she initiated what became at the time, and still could be, what initiated at the time, the biggest manhunt in history, trying to find Joseph Mengele. I mean, this isn't somebody, Eva, with a lot of power.
And basically, we're talking about a housewife in Terre Haute, Indiana,
yeah,
essentially. Is that right?
She was a realtor. At the time, she's raising two teenagers. A lot of this happened in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she, it's a long story, and it's in the film I did about her, so if anybody gets a chance to watch it, hopefully
we'll put a link to your film and connections to your film in our show notes here.
I appreciate that. But she, and I guess what I want to get at here is she's been telling her story forever, right? But her story was only really told, in my opinion, in the research I found, in two of the three parts, parts one and part three. Part one was her time at Auschwitz. She talks about that a lot in her lectures. And part three would be her forgiveness and the reasons for it and what's become of her since and how she's helped so many people. But there's 50 years in between there, between 1945, liberation, 1995, announcing forgiveness. And there was almost nothing about that. And she doesn't speak about it. It says a little more now that the film's come out. But she doesn't speak about that in her lectures. And I was so curious, journalist to me, saying, well, what happened? She didn't speak about it because it was so painful for her. Because she went through so much in introducing the Mengele twins to the world, in starting this manhunt. I mean, She was also arrested in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. She became, I used the word pariah earlier, she was not pariah earlier, just because of the way she protested and she raised her voice. And in sort of the hushed tone world,
but she was pretty adamant, wasn't she? Yeah, I mean she was kind of a pain to a lot of people, wasn't she?
She was, and it's not just that she was misunderstood. She was misunderstood, but she was also a pain in the butt, a very loud and a very fierce one. And because she was so filled with anger and rage and confusion, because she's trying to make sense of something you cannot make sense out of. And she reached, and she's a doer, so she wants to find, wants to figure it out, wants to solve this equation, and she couldn't get there. So I really worked a lot, WFYI, together, and my co-producer, Micah Brown, we worked a lot to mine, to delve, go into those 50 years. And in fact, we found that was the most revelatory part of all. That, it was those 50 years that led her, ultimately, or plowed the field so that she could forgive. I think essentially she had to sort of get to the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's where she got. But what's so funny is, to me, or interesting, is we traveled the world with her, 90,000 miles, 2 years, all the places, the key places in her life, Auschwitz, Romania, Israel, and whatnot. The biggest interview we had came in her attic of her house, in modest little house in Terre Haute, because that's where, we weren't even going to do an interview, but that's where we were just shooting her files, and I just got to talking to her. And I said, as the cameraman was doing, Micah was doing her stuff, and I said, you know, Eva, the more I think about this, the more I learn about you, I just can't imagine how alone you must have felt. And that did it.
That opened her up, huh?
She opened up, and my cameraman, Micah, was smart enough to turn the camera on her, and she knew we were filming her, so it was all above board.
Sure.
But that's why the interview in the film looks terrible, because we weren't going to stop it and restage it with perfect lighting and clean everything up.
This content was much more impactful than the
and she
lighting
opened
on.
Up about how lonely she was and how hard this was on her, and she showed her vulnerability in a way she never does in her lecture. And I remember walking out into the sunlight that day on Adams Street in Terre Haute and looking at Mike, and we said, wow, now we have a story.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
And that is what, it's that kind of thing that drives me. With Crispus Attucks, meeting people who went through just unbelievable racism and who had relatives killed because of it, and to see the pride they have in this school that really was a game changer in not just Indianapolis but Indiana.
Yeah.
So all of that, it makes me, I get excited about it right now. It makes me want to tell these stories.
Yeah, that's awesome, because you see how their lives changed and the emotion that they have and so on, but also the impact on others, which is what I'm really interested in, how the stories of other folks who have gone through some adversity. You don't get much more adverse than the Holocaust or terrible racism and lynchings and so on. That's all pretty bad. But how they've come out, in Ava's case at least, with the theme of forgiveness, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And, you know, it is still, people still debate it.
Sure.
Even her son wonders if it's the right word. I wonder if it's the right word sometimes. But what it's about is self-liberation, self-empowerment, self-healing. And she talks to students about this all the time. Is no matter what bad and unfair might have happened to you, you know, it'll hold you down, it'll keep you down if you let it.
Yeah.
But you have the right and the ability and the power within you, you really do, to move past it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. It seems to me in working with people who made true life transformation or stories that indicate true life transformation, there's almost always an element where some people talk about something deeper or more greater than themselves, a power outside themselves.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it's God. For some people, it may be something else, you know, meditation or so on. But what did you find in your subjects about anything along this line, about how they would call upon some greater power in order to help them facilitate their change?
I find that a lot. And I think with Eva, that's a good question. I think with Eva, a lot of it was her family, was her mother, which we tried to make kind of a big part of the film. I mean, imagine she never got to bury a family member.
Hmm.
You know, these were her biggest influences, and she was torn away. And I know that at some of the hardest times of her life, she would look back and think, "What would mom do?"
Yeah.
And you know, I think
and understand that, she left her mom at 10 years old.
10 years old. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's it is so hard for any of us to fathom. I don't think we really can.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's also, she has a really, really extreme sense of justice in a way. I remember her, some people might remember that her Holocaust Museum, Campbell's Holocaust Museum in Terre Haute, really, really a neat little, I would call it a national gem right here in our state. That was burned by arson. That was, you know, destroyed by arson. And she has talked about how, more privately, about how there was no sure thing that she was going to rebuild that. She had it. She had put so much into that, so much of her own money, and it was very, very difficult for her to envision starting all over again. And yet she finally made the decision one day that, what if I don't?
Yeah.
If I don't, that means these people win. Evil wins.
And what's kind the of message to other people or other generations?
What kind of example is that? I think that Eva has a strong sense of what, just human decency.
Yeah.
And, you know, for her, I think that really drives her. And teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, she has come to want her legacy to be all about teaching, and I would especially teaching young people.
I've seen that in just being around her a couple times, but also in your film and other stories I hear from her from my hometown of Terre Haute is that you know, she really pours herself into children. And
she does. And in fact, that's why instead of what I'm doing right now, instead of what I normally would do, just would be embark on a new film project. But we, having seen her, the influence, the effect, I've sat down, I've been privileged to sit down from world-class athletes, Colin Powell and all these people, but there's nothing like sitting down across from a teenager who was ready to take his or her own life until they met Eva.
Yes.
And talk to her. That's
transformational.
That's profound.
Yes.
Right? And so that's why we have embarked, instead of just jumping into another film, we've embarked on what we call our EvaCorps Outreach and Education Program. And we are now trying to take her message through various means into schools and libraries across the country, you know, via the success of the documentary. And we're going whole hog on this thing, and it's just so heartening to see it work.
And that's part of the cause that carries on then about her teaching and her legacy. And it seems like all these folks, when they come to a life transformation moment, they don't want to keep it to themselves. They want to share it.
Right.
And that's part of the storytelling. That's part of the fascination. And I think a part of that comes, and see what you think, Ted, about they have gone through a period of time, this wilderness experience, where they've experienced whatever it is, hate, destruction, racism, anti-Semitism, death, disease, depression, you know, medical experiments in her case, rough stuff. And if you can get through that and give yourself to others, then there's got to be love involved.
Oh.
Tell me about love and your experiences with these folks that you've been talking about, how that's experienced in them, or maybe how the love of their family or others has been influential in them. But how has love come to play here?
I think love is at the heart of it all. And I have to think that love is at the heart of, I would say, all of, I call them my films, they're not my films, WFY and Ted Green together, but I think they're at the heart of all of our collaborations, and it comes out in different ways, whether it's service to country, you know, whether it's love of family. With Eva, I will go so far as to say it's a love of humanity. You know, speaking to what you mentioned before, the way Eva looks at it is people can criticize her for promoting her forgiveness. The way she sees it is, what this did for me was so monumental. And if you're a doctor and you come upon a cure for cancer, what do? Are you going to keep it all to yourself? You know, she wants to spread it as far as she can, what this forgiveness did for me. You know, at first she was just talking about the Holocaust. But then she experienced it working in other scenarios as well. People who had gone through all sorts of horrible things, whether it's, you know, spousal abuse or neglect or whatever, they would come to her and they would listen to her and they would try it in their own lives, and it would work. And the more she saw that, she thought, you know, we're on to something here. This is a movement. And I'll tell you what, I guess I could be accused of promoting her too much. I will say right now that she is no saint. In fact, she told me, she said, don't make me into a saint. And I said, well, don't you worry, because you're not one. But at the same time, I think that, on the other hand, she's so unlike perhaps a Mother Teresa or a figure like that. Right. She's so human.
Yes.
She's beautifully human. She's beautifully relatable. And people see the power and the strength of this one person, to change the world. And she influences others, especially young people, to do the same. And I think it does spring from a love of humanity.
Yeah. And that transformation takes place not only because they were transformed, but also, and you tell stories on film, and I tell stories on audio and in print as well, because they've done something to share that story. And I think it goes a little bit to discipline, self-discipline, and actions that they've taken to spread that word. Tell me a little bit about her perseverance and other things that she did, or maybe others did, in order to have the discipline to change.
Well, I mean, just the perseverance you have to see, which is, again, hard. I try to put myself there. You know, when you, especially you walk around Auschwitz, which I had occasion to do on two different trips, and as it happens, I'm the father of twins.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
And it is not, it was impossible for me not to look at it through that lens as well. But, you know, there's no adult around to tell these 10-year-olds what to do or where to go. And you could look at it, well, it only lasted 9 months. Well, they didn't know it was only going to last 9 months. As far as she thought that was going to be the rest of her life.
Yeah, of course.
And it was a strict discipline, and it was a tough discipline. You couldn't let yourself feel in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, you just had to spend all of your time thinking about surviving. But I think that she showed toughness, you know, all the way through. She came to Indiana in 1960, as I said, and she went through some really horrible anti-Semitism over there in Terre Haute. Let's face it, it was alive. And she fought through that and fought through that. And, you know, then ultimately she had, you know, she sat for 5 years after she was determined she was going to make some sense of her life and introduce the Mengele twins and introduce all that happened to the world. She sent for 5 years, she sent hundreds and hundreds of letters to every media imaginable.
Wow.
And was completely ignored. And yet she kept going and kept going. Finally, she got a crack in the door. And that led to this, you know, global introduction. You know, she had the power, the strength, and the courage, I would say, to forgive what many would call the unforgivable. Wow. And then to stand up to just unbelievable criticism from some of her friends. And
she's,
you know,
as far as I know from seeing your film, also pressure from governmental bodies the public backlash and, of course, racist groups, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, you sort of have to see it to understand all she went through. And then she had the courage to forgive, again, the unforgivable.
Yeah.
And then to stick through it. I'm backtracked there, through that criticism. Sure. And ultimately, here she has the courage. She's 85 years old now. She is not in the best health. Later this month, she's going to lead two more tours to Auschwitz.
Oh, my goodness.
She
will not give up.
Physically. She will not stop. She talks about going to the 100th anniversary of Auschwitz liberation in 2045, at which point I think, I don't know, she'd be 121, 111 years old or something like that.
Hey, you can't put it past her, though, can you?
No, I'm not going to bet against her. But then, as much as anything, she had the courage and toughness to open up to us, to me.
Yeah. But tell me about that, Ted. What did you learn from her that changed you?
Oh my gosh, I'm still learning it. Lessons of resilience, principles of love and sticking to that. Boy, I'm struggling to put it into words. Here I am. I fancy myself a storyteller, and I'm coming up empty. But
okay.
Her power of resiliency, her power of just trying to do the right thing, knowing you're not perfect, her willingness to show herself, expose herself in all her vulnerability, warts and all, for the greater good of hoping to inspire and to teach lessons. Yeah. That inspires me to no end. And it's stuff that I try to teach my daughters now.
Sure. Well, part of what I'm getting at is that transformation that takes place from the witness of others can be transformative on us. And then we, I believe, are called to help be an influencer on others. And obviously you have a medium of filmmaking to help do that, to be an influencer on others, value-based films that you make. But I'd like for you to tell me a story as we start to wind this up here in the next couple minutes about how you've seen the impact of what you've been working on someone else, not in your world of your office here, but I mean when the film's been shown or in one of the schools or something. Tell me about a story where someone was impacted by your stories here.
You can't see the impact in the office. And sometimes I'm forced to tell people in the office this kind of thing as a way to justify the work that we do. You need to get out in the community. This is where the art, for lack of a better word, takes hold.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a story. I'll try to make it a quick one.
We're good.
This just came up the other day, and it was really, really moving. When there is a set of Mengele twins who had lived in New York for a long, long time, and Eva was very close with them. They were very, very dear friends. Their children dated each other and that kind of thing. You know, these Mengele twins really did bind together. And then Eva announced her forgiveness, and it just drove them apart. They, like so many of the other Mengele twins and other survivors, just absolutely shunned her. And this was in 1995. Right. She would reach out to them.
Just too much for them to handle, I guess.
Yeah, they just couldn't handle. They were mad at her. How could they forgive what killed our family? You know,
sure.
And it
understand them on many levels.
No, it completely is. And that's one thing I really want to make a point of here. I am not advocating. I'm chronicling, but I'm fascinated by what I'm chronicling.
Right.
But this, just the other day, I'm still kind of moved as I talk about it. One of these twins that they had been, you know, estranged from for so long, called Eva and said, "I want to tell you two things. First is that my twin died this morning.
Oh.
And the second thing is I had a chance to watch the new film about you last night with my wife. And if I knew then what I knew now about what you went through and what led to your forgiveness, I would have treated you so differently." And Eva was crying when she reported that.
Wow.
Awesome. And it wasn't. And her son told me I should be proud of that. And that's not what strikes me at all. What strikes me is, boy, it's so easy to misjudge people. You think you know them and their motivations for something. And in this case, it had these tragic consequences.
Sure.
You know, 24 years of lost friendship.
And that's kind of the payoff, isn't it, Ted?
It's the payoff. The payoff is also when you're in a school. And we get these beautiful testimonials all the time from these students, and they're just like, wow, what she went through, and she was able, look at her now, she was able to overcome that. I mean, you see something click with these students. We showed the film at the Pendleton Juvenile Correctional Facility recently, maximum, you know, security facility, and I didn't know what to expect. And afterward, in the discussion afterward, and these were high school students, obviously from rough backgrounds, and I thought maybe they'd be sullen. They weren't sullen. They were moved by Eva's story, and they wanted to do better things with their lives. It wasn't just what they said to us in the discussion afterward. Their teacher got in contact with us out of the blue and explained all this to us. That's the power that Eva has, and I feel like I have the best job in the world, because what do I get to do? I get to illuminate these people who are these life changers.
Absolutely.
Society changers. And I get to do that.
That's awesome.
I feel incredibly
And honest. That's the payoff, I think. That's what I like to call in my thinking and writing the promised life, where you have a place of peace. You've got a purpose. You've got something that's you know, fulfilling you, fulfillment. And that's awesome. Well, Ted, what are you working on now? In particular, I would like to highlight what you're working on is some of the stories and the educational materials that you're working on.
Right now, as I said, the main focus, I mean, there is other things that are, I get hit with ideas all the time, and there's a couple pretty big projects that I'm sort of toying around with and hoping I can become a part of. But right now, really, my focus is on this EVA outreach and education program because it is working. We have developed an educational toolkit, which consists of a shortened version of the film in which some of the, you know, the more graphic imagery is taken out. And we've vetted this with teachers and other educators to make sure this is appropriate. That we are spreading around this toolkit, a shortened version of the film, her young adult book, which is fabulous, called Surviving the Angel of Death, and an educator's guide. And this guide is not about Holocaust education per se, because there's a lot of wonderful Holocaust education out there. This, instead, is about Eva's 12 life themes: inclusiveness, acceptance, hope, forgiveness, empathy, moral courage, this kind of thing. Stuff that we believe is a lot more important than Pythagorean theorem, to life. And we are gaining wonderful traction with that. It's a grassroots movement. But again, because the film has been pretty popular, it's shown now in 45 states. And through PBS member stations, and they're all about community engagement. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take that community engagement, particularly into schools. That's and awesome. With this educational toolkit, we're now, our new frontier is virtual reality, which I'd never heard of about 6 months ago, old dog that I am.
Oh boy.
But it immerses students into Eva's time where they get a 360-degree sense of what she went through. And it's not gimmicky.
I bet the kids particularly love that.
They do, and their teachers say that they get more out of that than they would through other teaching methods because it does put them there. You have to be careful that they don't get blown away by the technology and just start to think it's a game thing, a game show. It's not, but that's how we do our education is that we have a discussion with them beforehand and they watch the film beforehand. So they appreciate and they start to feel like, oh my gosh. And we want to finish not just what she went through, but to finish on her forgiveness and what that healing and self-liberation has done for her and others. And teachers are raving about what it's doing for their students.
That's
so
great.
I can think of nothing, I can think of anything more, in my opinion, you know, sort of noble or needed than to take this amazing Hoosiers messages and to spread them as far as we can.
And to what I like what you just said, to get these materials out so people can finish with forgiveness.
And that's the key. We always say, don't just go through the awful stuff. See the transformation.
Yeah.
Because what she shows is what's possible. Elliot Gould is quoted in the film. Eva Kaur is sort of a lesson in what's possible in the human condition. A revelation is what he said. And that's what I found, and that's why I feel privileged beyond words to be able to be involved in this project.
Awesome. Well, it's been a privilege to hear you share these stories today and to see how transformation is taking place in your life. That is also then played out in telling the stories of transformation in others. And hopefully, but it is now an impact on others to transform their lives for the better. So we thank you, Ted Green, for being with us today on The Pathway to Promise.
What an inspiring story. What an inspiration that Ted Green shared about his own life and about certainly the life of the subjects of his films, particularly this film that we talked about here, Eva, A7063, the story of Eva Kaur. What an incredible woman that she is, and we hope to have her on as a guest on Pathway to Promise in the future. And because that's what we'd like to do here, is tell stories of inspiration, tell stories which are encouraging, stories that can build us full of hope. And today, of course, the overriding theme of the story of Eva is the story of forgiveness, how to finish with forgiveness. Let me just give you a couple takeaways that I think are important to this story today that I just want us to make sure that we touch on. There is, in the story, we have the story, first of all, Ted Green pivoting in his life, taking time out to spend some time with his family, raising his children,
then getting back into the game and not and adjusting to things that he had to do from the newspaper business to the filmmaking business. And I think we can take some heart in that and some guidance in that we all have to pivot from time to time. And of course, he pivoted to telling great stories that were inspirational about the triumph of the human spirit, especially this story about Eva Kaur, who survived the angel of death, Dr. Joseph Mengele, at Auschwitz. Her story is certainly inspirational to you, to me, and I hope to you, about how you can take bold action no matter what situation in life you are. She was a housewife in Terre Haute, Indiana, and it led to charge to get justice for the other twins who were experimented upon. And then it basically led, as a housewife, the biggest manhunt in history. She did that for decades, for 50 years or more, that she did that, and overcoming the pain that she had in her life. And that story, I think, of just get the handle of self-empowerment, of self-liberation, self-healing that she did in that whole process there. Heard about the power that Eva draw upon from her mother, who was separated from her at age 10, and yet she still drew on the inspiration and the power from her mother. And it caused her, and from others who were impacted by the Holocaust. And she lived it out. You saw her love of humanity. Love of humanity, even in the face of incredible inhumanity. And this is where the message of forgiveness comes into play. She chose to forgive. And in so, she teaches great lessons to me and to others of reliance and perseverance and toughness through the years and how that can impact others. I was touched about how right now Eva's message is impacting a lot of young people as her curriculum, the curriculum based on her movie, is in many, many, many elementary schools and is being taught as a part of the curriculum, and how there's been more than one occasion where the message of Eva has impacted young people and others as well, including a couple situations where people were thinking about harming or taking their own life, and her inspiring message encouraged them to do otherwise. I think it just shows us the power of forgiveness, the power of perseverance, and how, in the end, that the most important thing is to understand the transformation takes place in our life when we finish with forgiveness. Here at the Pathway to Promise, we're here to be helpful to you, and we focus on themes just like this, like forgiveness, like tolerance, like life transformation issues, grace, other things that can be helpful to help you have a fulfilling life, a life what we call the life of the promised life. That's a life of peace of mind and of heart, of prosperity, which means that we have everything that we need to have a good life in reforms of our relationships and our resources, and then of purpose. That is having a reason to live, a reason to function. Eva certainly had that in her life and still does. That's what we're about here, to tell those stories, to give teaching in those areas. My name is Dr. Brad Miller, and my purpose in life is to be an encourager to you. We do so here in the Pathway to Promise podcast. You can hear back episodes of the podcast at pathwaypromise.com. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher as well. And over on our website, we have a free gift for you, which is called the 4-Minute Life Planning Guide. That helps you begin and end your day successfully. We're here to be helpful to you. My name is Dr. Brad Miller. And until next time, let me encourage you to keep your promises, because there's power in a promise kept.
Thanks so much for taking the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. As a subscriber, you'll be a vital part of the Pathway to Promise community. Visit us on the web at pathwaypromise.com. Until next time, remember to stay on your Pathway to Promise.